Hi, and welcome to Menstrual Cycle Mastery with me, your host, Lisa DeYoung. I'm an educator, coach, and group facilitator passionate about exploring the menstrual cycle and the experience of pain or suffering many of us have. Using a mind-body approach and the menstrual cycle mastery skills, I support individuals to reconnect with their cycle and find relief, and I train professionals who want to guide others in this work. Freedom from suffering is possible for you, and there's so much more waiting for you on the other side. Let's dive in. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Menstrual Cycle Mastery podcast. I'm delighted to have you here, and thank you so much for tuning in. Today, we are going to be talking about the topic of group facilitation in menstrual cycle coaching. And the reason I want to talk about this topic is because, so last week when I was facilitating my Menstrual Coach Academy group, we are coming to the end of our 2025 to 2026 cohort. And it was our lecture day 6, which is always about building a business and building a practice as a coach or practitioner, or if you are interested in integrating menstrual cycle coaching into your existing work. So we were talking about group facilitation, group dynamics, etc. And I realized it's a topic I don't talk about a lot, but it's something I'm deeply, deeply passionate about, deeply curious about. And I love working with groups, and I love learning about groups and how to work with groups and the power of groups. Some of you listening, you know, you might have had really good experiences in different groups, and then you might have had not so good experiences or even negative experiences in groups. So I would just love to chat with you about this topic because, yeah, it's really, really important in this line of work. And it's such a great opportunity to learn how to facilitate a group really, really well that is in alignment with this type of work that we're doing as well. And yeah, it's like I said, it's something that I think about a lot in the background of my work. It's something that I bring to my supervisor. It's something that I'm, yeah, reflecting on a lot. And I just don't really talk about it because it's part of my work. And it's not always necessary for my clients to understand how to facilitate groups if they're, you know, working on their own menstrual cycle journey. So this episode really is especially for professionals, for people who are interested in working with groups, people who are interested in joining us in the Menstrual Coach Academy. So this one is for you. So like I said, the Menstrual Coach Academy of 2025, we are currently closing out that cohort. And I'm delighted to let you know that the new group is starting in July 2026. So if you are interested in joining me and working with me in becoming a menstrual cycle coach and training in this area, the doors are now open. You can join us. We have a very popular waitlist. So yeah, hit the link in the notes below, or you can go to menstrualcoachacademy.com and read more about the course. And don't ever hesitate to send me an email if you have questions or if you want to have a quick chat about it. That's no problem at all. Okay, so I'm going to start with my background and my history with groups. And the reason why I want to dive deeper into this topic as well is because I always get complimented on my facilitation skills, and clients ask me things like, what's your secret sauce, Lisa? What is it that you're doing when you're facilitating this group? Very often in the testimonials as well for the Menstrual Coach Academy, students will write, I've had bad experiences in groups before, but I've never felt this safe in a group before. Or I've had people say, I've struggled in groups of women, and Lisa's groups was a whole new experience, and it healed my wounds with being in groups of women. Okay, so there can be, you know, a lot of shadow in our experiences with groups and in groups of women, or you know, women's circles, etc. Or we might have had bad experiences when we were younger in our girl friendships and in groups of girls or groups of women. And it's all to do with socialization and maybe even our experiences in our family and family dynamics, or in how we are taught to relate to each other as women, taught to relate to each other as girls, indirectly, directly, and when things get difficult or when things are uncomfortable, what do we do then, etc. So while you're listening to this, I'd love for you to think about that, to just have a little think about what experiences were negative for you in the past, in groups, maybe in family groups or in groups of women or groups of girls or women's circles, what was negative. Sometimes we can have a funny feeling and we don't really understand why. Or maybe you've had a bad experience with a group facilitator that you felt uncomfortable with, or maybe you just felt something was off and you weren't really sure. So have a little reflection on that. You know, what was it about your experience there that made you feel unsure or disconnected or out of alignment or unsafe or suspicious or uncomfortable? Okay, so I think it's really important to think about those things and ask ourselves, what was missing? What would I have preferred had happened and why? And then after you reflect on those challenging experiences, then take a minute to reflect on experiences you had where you felt really safe in a group, where you felt comfortable in a group, where you felt like you could come out of your shell, where you felt like the group had your back, where you felt inspired by the group, moved by the group, connected to yourself, connected to the group, and excited to be there, and maybe even sad when the group comes to a close. Okay, so think about that. Think about, what was it about those groups that supported you to feel that way? How was the group being facilitated? How was the facilitator showing up? What was the facilitator doing and not? What were they not doing? What were the boundaries of the group? And just have a little think about that, and then, yeah, see what comes up for you. So to give you a little insight, I come from a family of six. So I grew up in a largish family group, and I don't have a massive extended family, but there were always people around: my grandfather, my aunts and uncles, cousins. Now we've got nephews and a niece, and then we have family in the Netherlands. So I've got family in Ireland, family in the Netherlands. But my nuclear family was a family of six, and parents are still married. So when I was growing up, our dinner table was six of us around the dinner table. And yeah, so that was definitely a group dynamic happening there every day. And it's interesting when we think about that, to think about the roles we play in our family system, the roles we play in the group. And that can be really helpful. It can also be really helpful to think about groups in school or groups in university or groups in the workplace, and how you felt in those groups and what kind of role you took on or that was assigned to you, whether that was intentional or unconscious, or yeah, just have a think about that and think about the types of roles you played in groups. And yeah, some people really, really struggle in groups, and I hear you, and you're not alone with that, and there's clearly a reason for that. So it's important that when you are looking for courses and trainings and groups to be in, that you do your research and you feel comfortable with the way a group is being facilitated. And that you're not going to be, well, I can't guarantee that you won't be triggered, because we all get triggered in groups, but that the triggers that happen are not like a repeat of a trauma, but rather or something that's like out of integrity. But sometimes the trigger can be an opportunity for healing in our groups. Okay, so I have that experience of the family group. And then after I finished my first degree in university, I then worked in the corporate world for a while, and then I did a second degree, and then I in linguistics, and I then became part-time an English language teacher. So I was teaching English in Ireland, and then I taught in Spain, and then I taught online. And I was working as a teacher, which was essentially classrooms of adults from different countries. For several years I did this, and I absolutely loved it. I loved it so much. I felt really at home in that job. I felt really connected. I loved every single one of my students. I loved getting to know my students and supporting them in learning English, because I did recognize in my early 20s that being a native English speaker is a privilege, because, yeah, I didn't choose to be raised this way. And I am very privileged to have English as one of my native languages, because it meant that I was more employable in the corporate world. And I could see that people from Brazil or South Korea, all these students that from all over the world, from different countries, who were so smart and really intelligent, but they needed extra support with English in order to support them to become more employable. I loved working with those students and helping them to feel more confident speaking English and, yeah, get the skills so that they're what they were great at, whether it was like science or technology or business, or they wanted to, you know, be employed in an accountancy firm, that they then felt like their language skills wasn't the thing that was holding them back for their career. So I became really passionate about that. And I always remembered as well, the teachers I had in my secondary school. I was also very lucky to have some really brilliant teachers in secondary school, and particularly for languages. So my French teacher, my German teacher were just so inspiring. And particularly my French teacher, Miss Dobbin, and she brought the culture into the classroom, and she made me feel like I wasn't like just learning off verbs and learning off lists of vocabulary, but rather building a relationship with a living language and just becoming really passionate about it and learning about the culture of France and the culture of the language and literature and all of that. So that really inspired me. So when I was teaching English, I also had a hobby of being interested in poetry and creative writing. And I used to bring a lot of poetry and creative writing into the classroom. And I remember also I brought in the Dragon's Den into the classroom. And these were all my ways of supporting my students to think not just about grammar and lists of vocabulary, but think about life and think about things they were passionate about through the language, without them feeling like they had to like grind and work hard, but rather they could start living the language of English, which they were learning with me. So I just became really passionate about working with groups, working, facilitating a room, getting my students to work with each other as well, putting them into pairs, doing exercises, different like activities. And yeah, and my role really as a teacher was to obviously give feedback and correct their English, etc. But more than that, it was to inspire them and to help them to feel really connected to the language, to each other, to have fun and learn, make learning like a fun, connected experience, as opposed to making it feel like they weren't doing enough or something that they were dreading. So that was my history with, well, this how I really got into teaching and working with a group. Unfortunately, in Ireland, that particular job working as an English language teacher wasn't the best paid job in terms of building a career. And then I started to do this work as well. So I didn't stay, but I do miss it. But what's beautiful about my work now is, particularly in the Menstrual Coach Academy, I am working with adults from different countries, different languages, and we are learning a new language, which is the language of the nervous system and the menstrual cycle. And I get to help people heal in those groups that I facilitate in the academy. Okay, so I guess it's a bit of a calling for me. It's a vocation. I also have my ancestors were teachers too. And yeah, I really, really am very, very passionate about group facilitation and the energy of a group and the connection of a group and how we work with the energy of a group and how a facilitator is there to hold space, not manage the group, not control the group, but to create the conditions in the room where the group can really feel connected to each other, connected to the work, and the best work can come through the group. It's a bit like a garden. Like you, if you're a gardener, you're setting the conditions for the plants, for the flowers, for the trees. You're not controlling, you can't force things to grow and for things to bloom, but you can create the conditions and you can water the garden and you can prune and weed and work with the energy and work with the garden. And then the garden itself starts to create itself. And that life force energy comes through the garden and it blooms. And that's the way I see group facilitation is you're working with the conditions, you're working with the energy, you're not controlling, you're not forcing. And a very important thing as well is that me as a facilitator, I'm observing, I'm tuning into myself, I'm staying connected, I'm listening, I'm pausing, I'm taking my time. I'm also preparing in advance. I do a lot of prep work before my groups I'm letting go as well and allowing the emergent process to flow through. So it's a bit of a dark art, and it's a beautiful thing. And you do learn over time how to do this. And now at the start, when I first started teaching classes and facilitating groups in this work as well, I would have been a lot more structured and more prepped. It would have been like A, B, C, this is what we're doing. But now I still have all that structure and that prep, but I do a better job of just being really present with my group and not worrying too much about what's coming next or what's, you know, what they're going to say or what they're going to do. And I feel really, really confident in my ability to even work with difficulty that comes up. So yeah, that's a bit about my background and my passion for group facilitation. And it's such an important thing to think about for menstrual cycle coaching, because we are moving away from this individual healing journey where healing and self-development and recovery or spiritual growth for the last maybe, you know, while several decades, it's been very much an individual journey, personal journey. And, you know, psychotherapy is very much about the individual. And I love counseling and therapy, and I think they're really important and really great. But one of the downsides of that is it's very much focused on the me and the individual, and there is a place for that. But what's beautiful about group facilitation is it's about a we, it's about a collective, and power of a group can be greater than just doing the individual thing, because you can be really held by the energy, the group dynamic, and supported in that. And what I have come to see as now a very experienced facilitator in facilitating groups in the area of menstrual cycle coaching and chronic pain is that I have seen healing happen in individuals in groups because they're in a group, because they're listening to each other and they're taking things in. And it's not just about me and what Lisa says, but all these women are listening to each other. They're healing their relationship with other women. They're hearing stories from women from different countries. They're hearing stories from women who are at different stages in their menstrual cycle, different ages. They're hearing stories from women who have different conditions. So somebody could be experiencing PMDD, somebody could be struggling with pain or heavy periods, or someone could be struggling with their perimenopausal symptoms. So there's a lot of diversity in the room. And that's the diversity also is a really big part of the healing that is happening, because if we don't have diversity in the room, what can happen in a group is we can create this like sameness and this belonging out of being the same, or there can be comparison or hierarchies can start to form. So the diversity is really, really important as well for the group. In the Menstrual Coach Academy, when we are talking about both individual coaching and group facilitation, we cover several modules that support you with this. So we cover a module on power dynamics and group dynamics and working with energy. And this is something to think about. There's a few different theories around group dynamics. So there's one particular theory we work with in the Menstrual Coach Academy. So something to think about when we are working with groups, and this is, I take this very seriously and I never not do this. So in the Menstrual Coach Academy, because we're talking about a very vulnerable topic that's very charged, and people are coming in with their stories, their history and their wounds, it's very, very important to set up a group really well and strongly. And when we set up a group really well and really strongly, it creates a container, a safety container that the group can then, and me as a facilitator, we can then drop into, and there's no kind of unanswered questions, okay? And it actually doesn't have to be very complicated. It can be as simple as having a group agreement, and a group contract is one example of setting up a group really well. I've heard people talking about creating rules. I don't like the word rules because it kind of chimes in with the feeling like you might do something wrong, or if you break a rule, what will happen? I just don't like it. It kind of triggers my rebellious nature in me to like break the rules or question the rules. So I don't set rules, and rather what I encourage you to do if you are facilitating your groups and you want to have rules or an agreement is to not to put the rules on the group, but rather to take time. It could be half an hour, 45 minutes in the first group, spend the time to create your list of values or your list of intentions for the coherence and safety of the group. And what you do is you co-create it with everybody, and you don't put the rules on your students. You don't put your rules on the participants in the room. And the reason for that is because when I'm working with individuals of a group, I really want to call forward their leadership and their inner adult and their inner mature person, and they're feeling like they are part of the group and they have contributed and co-created, and they have a stake in the agreements that you create. Okay, so I have an idea already of some like guidelines and things that I think are important. And if the group doesn't suggest those first, I bring them in at the end. So, for example, I'll always start with my own example. If I ask people to do something, I start with contributing the first one as an example. So, if we're co-creating an agreement, I might say, okay, I'll give you an example. Let's start with anonymity, that everything that is shared here is anonymous and that we keep our personal details protected within this group. And then usually everyone agrees to that. And then I open it up to the floor, and then all the women in the room will start to contribute their ideas for agreements. Now, you might be thinking, oh, well, that's going to create a lot of chaos, or everyone is going to give all these different opinions. My role as a facilitator is to make the call, okay, on the agreements. So if somebody says, and this is very often what happens in women's spaces, is no judgment is allowed here. I actually disagree with that from a trauma-informed, anti-oppressive, inclusive perspective. If I tell my group you're not allowed to judge anyone, people are going to be sitting like this on eggshells and feeling really un or self-blaming or self-shaming on the inside if they're having judgments when a group is in a big process. Okay, so I might say, look, I hear what you're saying. You really want to feel safe. You don't want to feel judged and you want to feel respected in the group, but I actually want to give you permission to judge. If you come into my groups and you're hearing me and you're hearing other women sharing things, giving opinions about things that we're discussing, you are allowed to judge. You're allowed to judge in your head. You're allowed to have all sorts of judgments. That is allowed. You're allowed. And it's what we do with the judgments that's the different thing. Okay. And then when I say that, I literally see all my participants just like breathe a sigh of relief, and they feel like, oh my God, I can have a not so pretty side to me on the inside, and I can have a shadow inside of me, and that's allowed, and it's okay if I judge. Because when I'm working with groups, I'm also asking my students, particularly in the Menstrual Coach Academy, where it's a lot of professionals, I'm asking us to do a lot of reflective practice and work with what's happening on our insides. And not that we always have to name it and share it with the group, but what we do with it afterwards. So if there is somebody who is struggling a lot with judgment, I'm there to support them then. And I can support them through their shame or their history, or maybe they come from a family where there is a lot of judgment, or maybe their mother judged them a lot, etc. So there's usually kind of a story there that needs a little bit of space and healing. But we can't heal it if we censor it, if we block it out. Okay. So that's a little bit of an example. I work with a lot of freedom. I work with a lot of permission. And then instead of having rules, I work with values, I work with intention, I work with my clients' maturity. And there's a very particular way of working with that without feeling like you need to manage and control people who are trying to figure out their way within a group. You might also be wondering about experiences where you have been in groups and you've seen maybe somebody taking a lot of space or sharing a lot or feeling like they're dominating the energy. And that's something I think about too in the Menstrual Coach Academy and in my groups too. We've all had that experience, and it can be disappointing, and it can trigger anxiety within us when that happens. And that's something that we discuss too in the academy, is how to work with different personalities, different neurodiversity types, different ways people process, different ways people share, different ways people communicate. It's really important that we find a respectful, inclusive way of working with different personalities and different needs and different energies. And being able to discern between somebody genuinely dominating and trying to have a power over within the group versus someone who is figuring their way through a group dynamic, or they have a different way of processing, or maybe they're autistic or something is happening for them. Usually, if you're facilitating a group over a period of time, that individual, maybe they talk a lot at the start, and then what I see is over time they start to realize, oh, I don't need to be in all this fight energy anymore. I don't need to dominate. I don't need to control. I can be safe in this group. And without me even saying anything or managing it, they usually realize over time within the space of the group, and the group starts to kind of relax as well. So that's something we talk about, is how to skillfully, respectfully do that without feeling like you have to manage and control people, because that's also not in alignment with the work we're doing. So as you can see, group facilitation, I bring a lot of curiosity, a lot of tracking your own nervous system while you're facilitating, tracking the room, being curious. Then after I facilitate groups, I'm reflecting on what was left with me, how the group is doing, etc. And so there's always going to be, especially in the academy, we're working for 6 months and you're in a container for 6 months. I want you to know that I'm tracking this sort of the continuation of the thread throughout that keeps the lectures and the process groups all together. So I track that. I'm discussing it with my supervisor and reflecting on that from a group dynamics point of view. And like an example could be, if I feel like the group has a lot of anxiety, they're asking me a lot of questions, I then feel under pressure to answer questions. There's something happening about capacity within the group, or an unmet need, or the group is worried about the group coming to an end. And so then I'm asking myself, okay, what's happening in the unconscious of the group? What do I need to bring in? Or how can I not react to this? And so this actually happened last week, where I felt a lot of nervousness, a lot of pressure, a lot of like needing to reassure. And what I did instead was I brought that into our reflective questions when I facilitated the group. And at the end of the day, I could feel the energy starting to relax and more regulation coming into the nervous system of the group. Once I was able to extract what was happening for me and then bring it back into the group for reflection. So that's a skill that is not learned from a book. You have to learn that from facilitating groups and working with a supervisor, or coming into the Menstrual Coach Academy and learning how to do that. And it's through that like unconscious psychodynamic Jungian kind of approach that the really, really wonderful healing can happen for people in the room. So that's curiosity. I also want to say that when we're working with groups, it can feel really intimidating having all these faces look at you. But one little tip I like to give people is, yes, you're working with a room full of individuals, but the group is an entity in and of itself. And that's a very important thing to think about when we're thinking about group dynamics, is to think about you're working like it's one being. The group has a nervous system in and of itself. It's an energy in and of itself. And so when you're in your reflection, you're not thinking about all these individuals. You're thinking about like what's happening within the group as an energy. So like I said, I felt under pressure because I felt like the group was wanting something more from me, and I had to kind of figure out what that was. So it's like a plant with lots of leaves and petals, but it's one plant. Okay, so that's a really helpful way of thinking about group dynamics if you're wanting to get into facilitation, because it takes the pressure off all these individuals. Okay. Another thing in terms of like when we finished the academy and my beautiful students were asking me, like I said, what's your secret sauce for group facilitation? And Lisa, I've never been in a group like this before. It's been amazing. And I have, you know, Bell Hooks, one of the great feminist educators to thank for that, and her book, Teaching to Transgress, to credit for that. And then, of course, my experience of facilitating groups and my curiosity in terms of pedagogy and group energies and, you know, the sort of more conventional way of learning, which is very much a hierarchy of like the teacher on top and then the group on bottom, and then just putting information on groups and individuals within the groups having to ingest, like drink a fire hose of information. And then the facilitator or the teacher is the guru, etc. So it is a patriarchal model of working with a group. And so the reason why I want to name that is because a lot of the way I see it, okay, some people will disagree with me, but this is how I see it. And from my experience, when we're thinking about systems and energies and structures, most of the root cause of menstrual challenges is in something to do with patriarchy and the lack of power and feeling disempowered, or lack of support or lack of education. So if we want to treat those things and we're using group facilitation and group dynamics to bring the menstrual cycle back to power, to bring the menstrual cycle back to connection for people, to support people in their healing and the rewriting their relationship with their menstrual cycle, we can't use a patriarchal, very conventional model for working with group dynamics, because then we can reinforce the same problem. So we can create more hierarchies, more comparison, having gurus facilitating groups with rules and big egos and not being able to be in their own ego, etc. So that's one way that I like to think about group facilitation. Also, is I'm always asking, how can I disrupt the patriarchy when I'm facilitating groups, and how can I work with power, not to disempower myself? I'm very much in my authority and very much in my skill set and in my mastery, but I'm also not hogging that and I'm handing it back. So a simple example could be, if we're discussing something that I personally don't have an experience with, like currently breastfeeding is one example, I'm not going to really teach on that. Well, I might bring it up, but I'll deliberately call on the women in the room to share from their experience. And I would encourage the group to share from their experience. Or if there is a woman of color or from a different country, you know, to really have those voices and raise those voices in the room and create space for listening and really encourage women to listen to each other. Because that's another thing about patriarchy and the menstrual cycle, is not being heard, not being listened to. And if we facilitate a group where one of my values in the Menstrual Coach Academy and one of the main things that I'm trying to facilitate is listening to women, is that's what's happening. And that's like an anti-oppressive way of working against these oppressive, like unconscious systems and structures. Even psychotherapy, you know, has a history of, it's kind of rooted in patriarchy and just a very individual journey. So when we kind of turn it on its head, we can ask ourselves, okay, how can I invert the structure? How can I invert the power? How can I change the system? Not to have it all completely like everyone is the same and equal. We're all different. We're working with diversity. But to support the flow of power through the group, through the energy of the group. And I use my power to support every individual to feel connected to their power and then connected to the power of the group is really what I'm trying to say. So another example of, you know, the ways groups can become kind of sticky or go wrong is if, for example, everyone is always agreeing with each other. As a facilitator, that can feel really good if all your students are loving what you're saying and they agree with everything you say. But then the problem is the group becomes a bit of an island in and of itself, and then it's not really connected to the outside world. Or maybe there's not enough diversity in terms of thought. There could be groupthink where everyone is just kind of agreeing with each other in the group. So if I have a group and there's a few people who disagree or bring a different perspective, I now, like, thankfully I'm over the ego part of the other stuff, and I'm able to see, okay, if people disagree or if they have a problem with something, the story I tell myself is, wow, they feel safe to share a different opinion and risk belonging in the group, or they risk approval within the group. And I always encourage that. I always try and ask, you know, if everyone is saying they had a great time or they loved that particular meditation, at the end I might say, was there anyone who had a different experience? I'd love to hear from you. And I really try and create a space for maybe disagreements or different perspectives or different experiences that are completely different to mine or other people in the room. And that's usually then a sign of safety within the group and diversity. And yeah, and what I also see is when I don't challenge that and when I allow space for that and I don't, you know, knock it back, they then feel safe in their truth and in their voice. And that's really, really healing for individuals who've had bad experiences in group, because sometimes people can adopt the black sheep of the group, the person who brings the shadow of the group. That can always be someone who sees the things that other people don't see, or they see the missing piece, or they see the bad side, or they feel the shadow, or they feel a negative emotion when everyone else is kind of seeing and feeling something else. Those people might have felt ostracized in groups, or they might have felt othered in groups, or they might have felt, you know, neglected or abandoned, or they had to leave the group because they didn't feel safe to express what they were seeing. And so in the Menstrual Coach Academy, when those people take that risk, because it can feel really scary to say the thing that's different. I do my best to really encourage that and welcome it and create space for it. And that's really healing for them, to have a space where they can say the thing and not have all those horrible things happen to them. And I relate to that, because I'm usually the person in groups who sees the missing piece or sees the error or is kind of in the shadow of the group. That's my personal experience of being in groups. And it's probably how I came to be pretty good, if I can say so myself, at facilitating groups and love what I do. And of course, I don't get it perfect. I make mistakes and I do reflect on that. And I'm far, far from perfect, and I can always be learning. But I feel naturally skilled and gifted at facilitating groups. And anyway, we're going to come back full circle. The reason why this is so important in the menstrual cycle work is because, like I said, I really think there's only so far we can get in terms of our individual healing and our individual journey. If we've had negative experiences in groups, it can keep us maybe distant from groups. But if there is an opportunity to learn how to do this and to be in a group where we can heal and work with the energy of a group and feel safe within the boundaries and the values and the intentions of the group that you contribute to, I would love to welcome you to the Menstrual Coach Academy 2026, where you get to be part of the big group, and then you get to be part of a process group, and you get to learn from me and other women and other people in the space. I am very, very proud of all of the work and attention I give into learning about group facilitation. And I'm so excited to show you how to do it and show you the way, so that you no longer have to be afraid of groups, and that you can become a master of energy with groups, and you can get excited about group facilitation. And what's also lovely about menstrual cycle coaching group facilitation is that it's probably cheaper for people. You can have a few more people in the room than just doing one-to-one coaching. It's more accessible. They get to learn from each other. It takes the pressure off you. You don't have to be the only person people are speaking to. They're connecting with each other as well, and you can create communities. So yeah, head on over to the link in the show notes, or head on over to menstrualcoachacademy.com, or feel free to send me an email if you have any questions at all. And that's it. Lots of love for the rest of the day, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for joining me on the Menstrual Cycle Mastery podcast. If you'd like to begin this work with me, I run the Menstrual Mastery Collective, a monthly membership where you can dive deep into this work live alongside me and a supportive community. I'm also the founder of the Menstrual Coach Academy, a professional training space for trauma-informed coaching and facilitation. Head on over to the links in the bio to sign up for courses, programs, and grab any resources available. I'm so glad you're here.